Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Of all the film festivals held around the world each year, one holds a certain amount of prestige, the Cannes Film Festival, which is held in a city of the same name in France. The International Film Festival was held for the 71st year this May, and at it, a film called Peacekeeper was screened. The 13-minute-long documentary is about the Dakota Pipeline and the response of the Native Americans who live on the land that would be developed for that project.
Some people think it's just about a pipeline. It's not just about a pipeline. The only thing that I can say about this whole thing is that it brought so many people together. The unity of people of all colors came together.
Though it takes place a couple thousand miles away from Southwest Florida, the story was filmed, animated, and edited by Nicholas Markart, a Florida State University student who's originally from Naples. Nicholas joins us now in studio. Thanks for being here.
No problem. It's my pleasure. Definitely want to just start out with a shout out to my co-director, Tyler Knute, another student at FSU who was with me every step along the way from conception to the production.
It's always good to have partners working with you. We are talking with Nicholas Markart about his film Peacekeeper, which was recently featured at the prestigious Cannes Film Festival. We invite you to join the conversation by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So, Nicholas, what made you decide to tell this story?
Well, it's funny. It actually, at the very beginning, we knew we were going to be doing a documentary for our class. We had a documentary class coming up, and in the semester preceding that, Tyler and I sat down. We knew we wanted to work together on this, and we were kind of talking about topics that we thought would be appropriate to work on. And Tyler has family in the Dakotas, and this has been something that is just very, very prevalent to anybody who lives in the area. And once we started researching the topic of the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Standing Rock movement, we found that the coverage was often more so about the environmental crisis more so than the human rights crisis.
Yeah, I found that really interesting. Your film really picked up on some things that I never heard about. And I followed the story. I mean, I didn't follow it as the only story I was following, but I followed that story, and I don't remember hearing anything about, like, the man camps, for example, and things that were infringing on the human rights of people in that area.
Yeah, the man camps are very shocking once you hear about that. Every news broadcast we looked at was all about the environmental crisis, which is absolutely at the forefront of the issue, and it's absolutely a problem that needs to be addressed. But at the same time, it's a problem that we're going to be facing in, 50 to 100 years, where the man camps, the treatment of women near the man camps in the reservations, that's a problem that's happening right now.
Now, man camps are these temporary camps that are set up for men who are working on putting in the pipeline.
That's correct.
And those are just, kind of imported laborers, I guess, just people from elsewhere in the country that come there and do that work.
Yeah, that's correct. The average man camp can hold anywhere between 2,000 to 5,000 men who will be in and out, kind of depending on once that oil is sucked up, they're out of there.
And it kind of reminds you of when you talk about the Old West or even Roman army bases throughout Europe, and the little towns would kind of like follow them and provide the services, and I'm using air quotes here, but those services end up leading to some things that are kind of dangerous. What were some of the things that you were finding?
Well, there's three really big problems, one being the import of drugs into the reservation that were not there before, another being then this is the problem that we found to be the most prevalent, is that women in the area, including young women, are being taken and missing from their homes. And in the film, we talked to somebody who knew a young girl who was 7 years old, went missing for several weeks, and they ended up finding her later. She was in a man camp walking around. Her knees were bloody and so on. And it's very horrifying stuff.
Who polices those, do you know?
Well, that's actually that's where the title of the film comes from. The title of the film is Peacekeeper, and we pulled that title from a piece of legislation that was made by the North and South Dakota officials called the Dakota Peacekeeper Act. This is an act that allows outside police to come in from outside of the reservation to police the reservation, and the intention was to address issues like this. But what's happened more so is that these police are coming in more so to kind of fight the protests and stop the protests more so than actually provide aid.
So they're policing the people that are protesting the pipeline instead of policing the man camps.
That's
correct. Where a lot of this is going on. It's a really stunning film. I mean, are you surprised that it ended up getting to the Cannes Film Festival? And how did this – you know, you make a film. You get into the subject matter and it's incredible and you put it together. And then it's at the Cannes International Film Festival. You know, no big deal. How did you do that?
Well, it was never expected. That was never the goal. As I said earlier, this started as a school project for Tyler and I. As we worked on it, we did know that it's a project that's very high in scope. Talks about some large issues, so we knew that we wanted to find an audience for it because we thought that we found stories that needed to be heard. But it was never expected to go anywhere such as Cannes International Film Festival. So when we found out that news, we were absolutely blown away.
Where were you? Somebody give you a call or what?
Yeah. So we were Tyler and I were actually we were in New York City at the time attending the Socially Relevant Film Festival in New York where the film was showing. And for us, Socially Relevant New York was a fantastic festival to be at. We were thrilled. And we were riding on the subway to the festival for our screening that night. And we get the phone call that from the American Pavilion, which is who sponsored us at Cannes, and they let us know that we were going, and we were both just floored. We started like basically jumping up and down on the subway. We were getting lots of looks.
I bet.
Yeah.
So did you go in May?
Yes, we did. Tyler and I both attended. It was absolutely a beautiful city. The way that I've spoken about it in the past is that I would call Cannes International Film Festival basically Disney World for filmmakers. Just because there's so much to do, so much to see, and just it's just the most magical place to be if you work in film.
So is your goal to go back?
Oh, yeah. I would love to.
So you don't normally do documentary. Is this new for you?
Yes. This was my first documentary project. I started making narrative short films when I was 12 years old with my friends and family, just seeing who I could get, like, hey, please be in this thing. I need an actor.
Stand there and pretend to be this guy.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's always been where my passion is. I love telling narrative stories, and that's what I'm continuing to do now. But I'm definitely not opposed to making another documentary. This process kind of opened my eyes to the possibilities that you can approach with a documentary as opposed to a narrative. But at the same time, story was really about conflict, and if the conflict there, they're two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, conflict is conflict, whether it's real life or it's a narrative situation. So you're saying that you're thinking about maybe doing documentaries. Have you been bitten by the socially conscious bug, and you want to make a change in the world, make it a better place by telling the stories?
I mean, it definitely doesn't hurt. The most touching thing for me about working on Peacekeeper has been, in the time following the production of the film, is staying in contact with the people who we met along the way and the people who were featured in the film. In particular, when we started going to film festivals and started to reach an audience with the film, I received a letter from William Brown Otter, who is the teenager featured in the film.
The runner?
Yeah. He ran – as a form of protest, he ran from the Standing Rock Reservation on foot to Washington, D.C. with a group of other youth activists, and he was at the time going to deliver a petition to Washington. And he's an amazing, amazing young man.
The interview with him was so touching. How did you get him to get so emotional with you? It's hard to get a young boy to talk about his emotions that way.
Well, the thing is we hadn't known him for very long at the time. We'd been in contact with him over the phone, you know, touching base with him, seeing how he's doing, if he's still ready to be on camera, because you always want to be sensitive about that. And once we met him, you know, we sat down with him for a while before the interview and just kind of hung out, being that he's a teenager and we're both early 20s. It wasn't too hard to find connections, just hang out and talk to him. And once it started, you know, I don't really think it has much to do with us leading him in any sort of direction as much as it is. It's just the situation there is a really, really difficult situation to be in.
He's kind of like a low simmer volatility there.
Yeah, he's had in his own personal life, I'll spare the details, but he's had tragedy in his own personal life and his family life that's related to the Dakota Access Pipeline. And once he started talking about it, especially in detail, you know, it's just the part where he got emotional is when he was talking about how he feels that the youth in Standing Rock is not represented, and they're not, their voices are not heard, and he feels justifiably so that his voice doesn't matter in the United States of America, and that he's afraid that it never will. And that's where he started to choke up and get emotional.
I don't want to be too rose-colored glasses, though, but it sounded like there was a bit of unity, though, that came shining through with people coming together.
Absolutely.
And maybe giving a bit more of a voice to the young people in the community there.
That's absolutely true. And that's definitely one of the focuses that we wanted to show in the film is that – and in the past few years, this movement, this I Stand With Standing Rock movement has caused unity within the tribes across the United States of America that haven't been seen in many, many years. Within all 500 tribes now, you have people standing with Standing Rock and a raised awareness. And with that unity and that togetherness that's there, it's increasing the voice that's being heard. I think before this, a lot of people either were just unaware of the issues that were being faced on reservation land. Whereas now, I'm noticing more and more people are familiar with the topic when we speak about it.
Yeah, it's really interesting how it's kind of been a slow growth too, you know, which may be a little bit more sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I know one of the people that we talked to was, his name is Ray Taken Alive, and he's a social media presence in his tribe, and he's also just very active on the internet and in making his own short films. And he told me that he was worried that when the I Stand With Standing Rock movement came to fruition, that it could have just been, you know, just a trend, like a trendy thing where it's just going to be like it's going to trend on Twitter. We'll have the hashtags and then it's over. But what you're seeing is that there is this lasting resonance that even after the pipeline fight has kind of quieted down in the past few years, this awareness and this feeling of being moved by the story is still very much there.
Maybe a sense of tribal pride and solidarity too is helping that. I got to say though, it's a really powerful film for only being, what is it, 13 minutes long?
13 minutes, yeah.
So it's worth a look. See, you can check it out on YouTube. It's available on YouTube. You can find the link at gulfcoastlive.org. But I want to thank my guest, filmmaker Nicholas Marquardt, Peacekeeper. It was a really, really good 13 minutes, well spent.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, and congratulations again.
Thank you.
And I want to thank my earlier guest, Dr. Pamela C. from FGCU, and Delilah Edwards is board-certified lactation consultant and maternal educator with Lee Health. Dr. Carol Lawrence, also with the Perinatal Practice Education Research and Lactation, also at Lee Health. To all my guests, thank you so much. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary and Rachel Iacovone. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.